Good afternoon. My name is Anisa Ali. I'm Associate Provost and Affirmative Action Officer here at the University of Chicago. On behalf of President Robert Zimmer and Provost Thomas Rosenbaum, I welcome you and thank you. We are so happy to have you here today to share in the university's third annual Veterans Day recognition program. And when I say share, I do mean share. So you're here to observe, and we also are looking for your participation. I've been at the university a number of years now, and I have been very fortunate to get to do a lot of work with some truly wonderful people on a regular basis. But I have to say that my involvement with the university's outreach program for veterans and the close interaction with them, those who've been engaged in creating this archival collection, have been uniquely rewarding to me personally and professionally. I am confident that you will find this remarkable exhibit worthwhile as well. I have to make some acknowledgments, because this is not the kind of thing that can be done by just one person or one team or one group. First, I want to thank the inaugural program participants, the contributors. They're here in the front row. Their names are listed in the program. In the interest of time, I'm going to just ask everyone, if you would just stand for a moment, and I want to say that we are enriched by your presence and your gift to the university. Also, I have leaned very heavily on the Veterans Exhibit Advisory Group. My special thanks goes to this group for your wise and sensitive and tireless stewardship. It was very important that the veterans be pleased with this and be the guiding force behind it. There's some overlap, but I need to ask you again if you would stand. Those individuals include Josh Cannon, David Chiro, Ruben Del Valle, Mike Gelassi, Don Hipp, Stan McCracken, Anita Smith, and Fountain Walker. So if you would stand again. I have to thank Dean John Boyer, because he was one of the first officials that I called into service, and he said yes with his support, both in terms of support and in terms of leadership. He saw to it that we had an excellent MedCAF intern to work with us, and he is the university officer who will be giving his remarks on service for us in a few moments. The names of the cadets who will be posting the colors are also included, and this was something that we added last year. That was one of the first things that we heard, was make sure that you do it again this year, and we are honored to do so. We've had wonderful partners with this. Judy Nadler and Regenstein Library with special collections, teams and individuals. I won't be able to mention everybody. Here at the Logan Center, my colleague Bill Michael, Lee Fagan, and their talented staff have helped us bring this together. I have to say that Perspectives and Student Counseling Services has been with us all along the way, providing support through the many meetings that we had to help make this happening. In terms of visioning, I have to give special thanks to Julie Peterson and the teams at UChicago Creative and UChicago News. Also, Tony Herschel at Smart Museum to help us understand with before we knew what it was that we were going to have for you today, help us have an idea of how we could present it to you. Implementation, certainly the Veterans Outreach Committee, they greeted you. They are part of the hosting team, and we had help from the Office of Legal Counsel, the Office of Risk Management. Their only constraint was that we didn't exhibit anything that goes boom, and so we were happy to comply with that. The Office of University Events and Ceremonies, and most of all, the Corps Provost Office team, Mitchell Kitlaus, Nick Judge, Rachel Sullivan, our intern, and our project manager, Arnie Aronoff. You'll also see in the program that we have an empty seat, and that was a seat that was held by Josh Castile, who was on our first, at our first committee meetings 2.5, almost 3 years ago. He passed away in August, and we miss him. It's been an honor, a special honor, to develop and implement this project. And with so many of the truly outstanding veterans I've gotten to know, I invite you to get to know them too. You'll see that they have veteran on their tags. Take your time viewing the stories and sitting with them. And we're looking for your participation with the Wall of Remembrance. Now, if you will please stand as Detachment 195, posted at Illinois Institute of Technology, presents the colors.
colors. Colors turn. Hearts.
I just want to share a little bit with you about how we got to today, which is our, as I said, our third annual recognition program. All good things start with seed planting, and I have to say, since it's really been at least since 2009 that the university has been particularly focused on being actively involved in efforts to engage and attract veterans to work and study at the university, beginning with our participation in the Yellow Ribbon program around that time. Some of you who are here will remember that around that time, Peter Sellers was here, and all of the veterans were invited to Lyric Opera to talk about Hercules and the coming home experience. This provided yet another way for university student, faculty, other academic and staff veterans to build community here at the university. And so we formed the committee, the Veterans Outreach Committee, and developed an agenda and a subcommittee structure. And a few of the things that we have accomplished since that time included this program, also participation in 2011-12 Illinois Warriors Summit, which was focused both on employment and higher education. Last year, some of you may recall that President Zimmer hosted a breakfast for all of the veterans who were graduating from all of the university's educational programs. We also thought it was important to build bridges with other veteran communities, and so the building contact and participation with the university's alumni group. It's called Military Affinity Group. Also, veterans at the medical center, we've reached out to them as well. You may know, or perhaps not, that Chicago Booth has the largest single group of veterans in their with their armed forces group. And so collaborations with them and with the greater Chicago Midwest Higher Ed Research Consortium has been very, very worthwhile. We've had external relationships that we've begun to build as well. Some examples of those are the McCormick Foundation, who invited us to join with other Chicago area universities to brainstorm about what might be best practices for veterans returning home who pursue higher ed. How can we get their success rate higher? And so we've been involved with that effort. Pritzker Military Library didn't hesitate when I reached out to them many months ago to find out how we might pull together our own collection of stories of university veterans, and they were very generous. Also, the National Veterans Art Museum has been a partner with us as well. The Wall of Remembrance, I'm going to keep coming back to that, because at the end of the day today, all of the stories that have been so selflessly submitted by our veterans, and also all of the cards and mementos that you post on the board, will become part of the University of Chicago archive going forward. Please do take, if you didn't come here intending to do this, do take a few moments to think about who are the veterans that have been important in your life and just add their names and on a card and also your relationship to them so that this can be provide a time and a place for you to remember them always. Our next steps, the direction for our Veteran Outreach Committee will include identifying existing University of Chicago efforts, things that we're currently doing that can be organized in a meaningful way to effectively and efficiently help prepare Chicago area veterans to stand out as competitive job seekers. And we've got a lot of wonderful activities and programs, and we're looking to see how we might be able to make string those together in a nice pearl so that it will be beneficial to the veterans returning home. The other side of that bridge, though, is educating University of Chicago hiring manager community on barriers and biases that individuals face when they leave the military and seek employment as a civilian. So I have a great subcommittee structure that I had the honor of working with. I hope that you will take full advantage of this opportunity and begin having conversations, important conversations, at work and at home, so that we can create a wonderful, welcoming culture and environment. Now I am going to ask Fountain Walker to, I think the next thing is you're going to introduce our speaker. Okay, thank you.
Good afternoon, everyone. I have the honor of introducing a gentleman who has been a member of this university and community for quite some time. And I will read his introduction simply because it is something that I could not commit to memory. I'll be honest with you, it is quite impressive. John W. Boyer, the Martin A. Ryerson Distinguished Service Professor in History, was reappointed to a fifth term as Dean of College in 2012. He became Dean of the College in 1992. During his tenure as Dean of the College, John Boyer has strengthened the college curriculum and the college's admissions program, and he established the Society of Fellows in the Liberal Arts, which brings young postdoctoral scholars to Chicago to experience core teaching and learning from the mentorship of tenured and tenure-track faculty of the college. Boyer was also deeply involved in the establishment of the University of Chicago Center in Paris. He has worked to create many new programs for college students involving foreign study, internships, and foreign language instruction to broaden student research opportunities, to enhance the relationship of the college to the professional schools, to expand on-campus facilities for residential life, to strengthen programmatic and financial resources for student life, and to provide strong career advising programs for college students. John Boyer has served as an editor of the Journal of Modern History since 1980, a specialist in the history of the Habsburg Empire and of Central Europe in the 19th and 20th centuries. Boyer received his PhD from the University of Chicago in 1975 and joined the faculty in the same year. Boyer has written three books, including Political Radicalism in the Late Imperial Vienna, Origins of the Christian Social Movement, 1848 to 1897, for which he was awarded the John Gilmary Shea Prize, and Culture and Political Crisis in Vienna, Christian Socialism in Power, 1897 to 1918, for which he was awarded the Ludwig Jedlicka Prize, both of which were published by the University of Chicago Press. In 2004, Boyer was awarded the Cross of Honor for Science and Art, First Class by the Republic of Austria in recognition of his scholarly work on the history of the Habsburg Empire. He received the 2006 Austrian State Prize for Modern History, He is a corresponding member of the Austrian Academy of Sciences. John Boyer regularly teaches European civilization in the college and courses on religion and politics in modern European history and on the history of the Habsburg Empire and a modern Germany. He's currently writing a history of the Habsburg Empire for Oxford University Press and a history of the University of Chicago for the University of Chicago Press. And what I will tell you is I am very happy and proud to introduce officially the unofficial historian, as I am told, of the history of the University of Chicago. Dean Boyer.
I want to thank you for that introduction, and I'd like to thank Anissa Ali for her quite remarkable leadership in organizing not only this event, but also the events of the last several years. I think it's her intervention and her leadership has been very important for strengthening and for creating, in a way, and then for strengthening the veterans community at the university. I'm honored to be able to offer some thoughts today on the importance of service for our veterans. I'm present in this illustrious company this afternoon by virtue of having served as an Army officer in the United States Army Reserve from 1968 to 1980. I was made it to the rank of captain. I first encountered the military as an ROTC cadet in college from 1964 to 1968. Many students find the transition between high school and college challenging, but for those of us who simultaneously joined the Army as a cadet while also joining a university as a freshman, it was doubly challenging. Frankly, I had no idea what it meant to become a military officer and what it meant to eventually have a group of men depend upon your good judgment, sound training, and good sense to make difficult and even dangerous decisions in the ways that were successful. I also had little or no idea about the kinds of rational and disciplined hierarchies that military service inevitably demands and requires. 1964 was a year on the eve of the beginning of the great buildup in Vietnam, and soon discussions engulfed us as college students as to the direction of that war and its justifications, if not its outright justice. And so I encountered a fascinating dimension in which service in the military and service in higher education collided and contested. Many of my fellow cadets were opposed to the war in Vietnam, some adamantly so, and I think it's fair to say that almost all of them hoped that they would not be asked to serve in that theater of operations. Yet many of them did end up going to Vietnam, where they served with honor, if not with total conviction. In contrast to the certainties of the First World War and the Second World War, about which I'll speak in a minute, the Vietnam War became a quicksand of political acrimony. These were hard times, but also fascinating ones to be a member of the military services. My later engagement with military service came as an historian, as was just mentioned, and that I, in the course of writing a series of historical monographs relating to the history of the University of Chicago, I decided to look into the role of the university during times of war. We've had two presidents of our university who were military veterans, Harry Pratt Judson, who served before World War I and during World War I, and Robert Maynard Hutchins, who served before and during World War II. And it's perhaps not so totally surprising that these two men happened to occupy the presidency during two great wars. Wars are often important catalysts for social change, and big wars frequently produce big change. World War I and World War II profoundly influenced the basic institutional and cultural underpinnings of American society, and this was no less the case for American universities. Wars are rarely concluded in ways that their planners and ideologues imagine. In fact, war makers take huge gambles, sorely tempting the unintended consequences of human action. Sometimes the outcomes of war are worse than the causes that led to the conflict. In other cases, provocations for war are so heinous and so terrible that war is the only inevitable moral outcome. The fascination with war never ceases, and yet our expectations about the future are never more fragile and subject to error than in times of war. On our campus, the two war presidents, who were also veterans, Judson and Hutchins, had totally different views of the purposes of war and the ways in which the University of Chicago should support the nation in times of war. During the First World War, faculty members on our campus were divided over the war. Some faculty members supported Woodrow Wilson's regime of neutrality, all the while hoping for a Franco-British victory. Others were eager that the U.S. join the conflict as soon as possible. For a small minority of faculty who were sympathetic to Germany, the war was both a horrible and a frustrating experience. Our president of the university during World War I, Harry Pratt Judson, was very pro-war and pro-military. Judson had a lifelong interest in military affairs. Too young to fight in the Civil War, Judson tried to enlist as a drummer boy in the Union Army. The Civil War was a living memory, horrible, fascinating, and persistently romantic, and it affected his thinking about World War I. While teaching high school in Upper New York State, Judson served in the Troy County Citizens Corps, which was a private militia company that was eventually incorporated into the New York National Guard in 1877. Judson greatly enjoyed drilling and marching with his comrades, and he took great pleasure in the camaraderie afforded by voluntary military service. So technically, by being a member of the New York State National Guard, I think that it's fair to say that Judson was a veteran. Harry Pratt Judson embraced World War I. By the time the U.S. presidential elections in 1916, Judson openly opposed Woodrow Wilson's attempts to maintain U.S. neutrality, and he advocated American joining the war. He had little sympathy for the plight of German Americans. He was a robust advocate of peacetime universal military service. When a pacifist Baptist minister from Fond du Lac, Wisconsin, challenged Judson on his call for military universal service, Judson dismissed this guy by arguing, quote, "If any young men are too precious to give their lives for the purposes of the defense of his country, they should carefully be put away in a museum," end quote. When Congress declared war on Germany in early April 1917, Judson threw himself into its prosecution. He responded by supporting all possible measures to mobilize our campus, from encouraging students to volunteer for a new military science program that he had established in late 1916, to leading war bond solicitations, to giving anti-German speeches, to drilling students on Stagfield. Stagfield used to be where the Regenstein Library was, and Judson would get up every morning and actually conduct military drills for volunteers at the in Stagfield, much to the amusement of his fellow faculty members. In late spring 1918, the War Department announced the creation of a new campus-based military training program, the Student Army Training Corps. This was the predecessor to what is called ROTC today. The SATC was to be a residential training program on college campuses sponsored by and paid for by the Army as part of a scheme to train 100,000 new officers and non-commissioned officers by June 1919. Harry Pratt Judson eagerly embraced this new military training program on our campus. SATC students were to be housed in university dormitories, Snell, Hitchcock, and Gates Blake, and in specially constructed barracks under the stands of Stagg Field. The university spent over $50,000 in these conversions with the goal of housing up to 1,500 student soldiers. At the time, the university also announced that many of its fraternity houses would be requisitioned by the Army. Hence, for Judson, the nation not only needed universities to serve as the sites of scholarship, teaching, and research, but also as active partners in the conduct of military training and especially officer training. His approach was thus to link the universities and the armed services in a tight and perfect union for the national good. However, many of our faculty, as I've already alluded to, disagreed with Harry Pratt Judson. And when the issue of renewing the military wartime military training programs, which had then been designated as ROTC, when the issue of renewing them on a post-war basis came before the Board of Trustees in late 1918, the Dean of Faculties, James Angelo, was forced to admit that while President Judson was a study enthusiast, most of the faculty were, quote, decidedly opposed, unquote, to renewing the program in peacetime. Judson was able to get his way, however, and an ROTC field artillery unit was created under the aegis of a Department of Military Science, which was, after 1930, attached to the Division of Physical Sciences. The ROTC unit remained at the University of Chicago until the War Department transferred it to Michigan State University in 1936. But as early as 1924-25, the leaders of our ROTC program complained about, quote, the apparent attitude of indecision as to whether the military department has a place at the university, unquote, and, quote, about the lack of active support by the faculty generally, unquote. ROTC's final years on our campus were marked by falling student enrollments and increasingly inadequate facilities, as well as by what I would have to say is the indifference by senior officials in the Hutchins administration, who refused to encourage students to take military science courses over many of the other electives available to them in their college curriculum. If Harry Pratt Judson actively embraced World War I, World War II was a different kind of war, and the University of Chicago had a different kind of war president. Whereas Judson believed that the war was a just and even noble cause, President Robert Maynard Hutchins took exactly the opposite view, becoming an eloquent spokesman for non-intervention in the European and Asian wars of the late 1930s. In the 1930s, American college campuses were marked by strong anti-war and pacifist movements, and the University of Chicago was no exception, with Chicago students organizing peace strikes, rallies, and parades from 1934 to 1941. In late January 1941, for example, the Chicago Maroon, which is our student newspaper, undertook a sample poll of 600 college students, finding a majority, 315 against 236, strongly supported the proposition that America should stay out of armed conflict involving Germany or Japan. In contrast to the predicament of students favoring non-intervention in 1914-16, anti-war students at Chicago in 1940-41 had an eloquent faculty leader urging neutrality in the person of Robert Hutchins. Having served as a young Army ambulance driver in Italy in 1917-18, so Hutchins was a veteran, Hutchins had seen what he called, quote, the suffering caused by the war and its devastation, end quote, at firsthand. And he later wrote that his experiences, quote, made me into as much of a pacifist as I am. It gave me a deep suspicion of the military, end quote. Unlike Harry Pratt Judson, Hutchins found nothing to admire or justify about any war, and especially about World War I. Hutchins was not an official member of the America First Committee, which was a committee that argued that, that the U.S. should stay out of the war. And his biographers have denied any connection with the official isolationists. But Hutchins' very controversial speeches against Lend-Lease and against military support for Britain in the winter and spring of 1941 evoked a conception of America's naturally limited role in the world. For Hutchins, the peace that World War I had promised America was a phantom, one that had led to violations of civil liberties at home and to disastrous international consequences abroad. The conflicts of the 1930s were, in his mind, the unintended offspring of the First World War. To lure the young Americans into a second military crusade, he felt, was to invite them to commit national disaster by destroying all possibility of a just, free, tolerant, and well-cared-for civil society. But when war finally came, and it came on December 7, 1941, it came with a suddenness that cut through all the conflicted emotions from 1939 to 1941, ending the moral agony endured by many of our faculty and students and the larger nation as well. By rupturing our history so decisively, Pearl Harbor created the conditions for a classic just war. The effect of total war wrought by Pearl Harbor, were soon seen throughout our campus. Hutchins basically pivoted 180 degrees and agreed to host a variety of military training programs, and by 1942, virtually all available dormitory space at the University of Chicago had been consigned to military programs. However, the military training programs of 1942 to 45 were quite different from the 1918 SATC or ROTC model, which Hutchins despised. Hutchins himself had insisted as early as 1936 that when the War Department closed down our ROTC program for want of student interest, that the university might best serve the national defense by focusing on what he called our capacities for, quote, advanced training and research, end quote. Hutchins tried to enforce these propositions. And the programs that we organized, like the Civil Affairs Training School for Army personnel who were going to the Far East, that was launched in 1943, or the Institute of Meteorology, which was to train people in analysis of weather, started in 1940, could be viewed as appropriate candidates for this model of research, advanced research and training. The university hosted other military training programs as well, including a Navy Radio and Signal Training School that began in 1942 that enrolled 600 trainees. And by 1943, approximately 2,600 soldiers and sailors were taking special instruction, including such subjects as medical hygiene, optics, electronics, nursing supervision, and German. Ironically, measured in numbers of service personnel on our campus, Hutchins presided over a wartime mobilization of our campus far greater than anything Judson could have imagined. As Hutchins put it to the faculty in January of 1942, quote, we are now an instrumentality of total war. If this sounds patriotic, and I have no reason to think that it was not, It is also very clear that Hutchins allowed the establishment of these various special training programs as a way of blunting the danger that someone might want to create an SATC or ROTC-like program involving the regular academic curriculum, which he would have thought is a militarization of the university. However controversial all of these positions are, both of these wars called upon the university president to provide leadership before, during, and after the outbreak of hostilities. Harry Pratt Judson anticipated, lobbied for, and embraced the War of 1917, whereas Robert Hutchins opposed and rejected the War of 1939 until the fait accompli of Pearl Harbor made his anti-interventionist rhetoric meaningless. Then, in a stunning reversal, Hutchins was forced to become a wartime president presiding over a militarization and a mobilization of our campus that far surpassed anything Judson could have imagined, but in ways that kept a clear boundary line between the university and the armed forces more generally. Although the First World War divided our campus, it was a very short war, and the fact that it was a supremely victorious war helped to cushion the shocks that the campus endured. The Second World War was, in contrast, universally supported, I believe, by almost everyone on campus, but only after December 7, 1941. Unlike both of these wars, the Vietnam War of the 1960s and early 1970s that I experienced as a young college student was a long war that not only bitterly divided the campus, but that found the majority of student faculty opinion arrayed against it. The experience of our campus during the Vietnam War was thus completely different from those of either World War I or World War II. Neither of the presidents of the university during the Vietnam era, George Beadle or Edward Levy, were veterans. Moreover, the morality of the Vietnam War, if I could put it in those terms, and its rationale were so deeply questioned by students and faculty alike that federal reporting requirements involving the drafts, the requirement that, that we were supposed to send class ranks and enrollment status to the Selective Service System for male students, this became a point of great controversy on our campus. The Vietnam War also proved, as we know, to be a horrendously costly war, both in human costs and in financial costs, without a clear strategy for success. And it seemed to be, at least for those of us at the time, a war with no visible end. Rather than engendering support for the dedication of the men and women who were fighting in Vietnam, the war came to be widely despised by many on our campus and by many on campuses like our campus. This brings me back to the times during which I served in the armed forces. As I mentioned above, I entered the Army as an ROTC cadet in 1964, and I was commissioned as a second lieutenant in the Army in 1968. I was given the opportunity to attend graduate school from 68 to 71 before being called to active service. I thus experienced at first hand at two different universities the deep tension that this deeply unpopular war engendered on university campuses, and a widespread and popular hostility among the student body against the very ideal of military service, and I have to say against people serving in the military, to be very candid, which was a commonplace experience during those eras. Still, if the years during which I and millions of others served in the armed forces were tumultuous, the lessons that those experiences of those years afforded me, at least, were lasting. My grandfather had the honor of serving in the American Expeditionary Force in France during World War I. And my father was a U.S. Army Air Corps enlisted man stateside in the Pacific Theater in the final stages of World War II. Our family thus had its fair share of military stories, but both my grandfather and my father served as enlisted men, whereas I had become an officer. I learned a huge amount about myself serving as a junior officer in the Army, about the importance of small group leadership, and particularly about the importance of taking care of the men and women who serve with you and under your command. Many years later, I still find myself using some of the leadership tools that I was presented with in the Army and fulfilling my responsibilities as a leader of the college. In some respects, my role as dean of the college is actually, and I want to stress that this is in functional terms, not in constitutional terms, is more like being a president of a liberal arts college than a dean. And any effective college president, like any effective military commander, must be deeply concerned with the morale of his troops. My troops in this case, and I use troops in somewhat genially ironic sense, my troops in this case certainly include the faculty and staff of the college, but they also include 5,500 students in our college and over 10,000 parents. Over the past 15 years, as we have developed and implemented many new ambitious programs involving student life and student support in the college, My conviction about the importance of taking good care of those entrusted to your responsibility has grown even stronger. My concern about and my preoccupation with the general morale of our students and our young alumni is thus certainly has one of its roots in my experiences as a young Army officer now decades ago. Like many of you, I also met a host of fascinating women and men from all classes of society during my service in the Army, men and women of all socioeconomic and ethnic backgrounds and all religious faiths. I learned that an Army base in Kansas is not quite the same thing as an Army base in Georgia, and serving in the Army was to encounter a broad and rich cross-section of American life in the 1960s and 1970s, and for me, at least, it was a truly fascinating cultural, political, and ethical experience. This is not the time or the place to launch a debate about the merits of a conscript army, as opposed to a professional army, but I do believe that our nation has been fundamentally well-served by having large numbers of our citizens participate in the work of national defense, even if some of those who did serve did not want to serve under the draft, or had mixed and even conflicted memories about their time of service. Effective military service, in my view, requires total personal and professional dedication to the point of being willing to risk and even to sacrifice one's life for a larger strategic good. This capacity to understand the profound contingencies of being human in the world, to appreciate and to accept both the noble and the ignoble that can crisscross any life, and to see life's challenges and opportunities in larger, more capacious, and wiser ways is, I believe, an enduring feature of successful military service, and I'm convinced that it can have positive after effects. Indeed, it has often been my experience that many of the women and men who had such conflicted experiences from the 60s and 70s during their time of service turned out to be extremely proud of the fact that they had served, and most, over the long duration of their lives, have come to find their personal experiences in the armed forces fascinating, rewarding, and even life-changing. Again, I'm delighted and honored that you asked me to speak today. I congratulate you on your service in the armed forces. I want to assure you and remind you that the university is very proud of you in your role as veterans, as is our nation. And I'm delighted that so many of you could join us today for this wonderful event. Let me close by wishing you and your families a most joyous and happy holiday season. Thank you very much.
I've been a little sheepish today because usually I'm quite loud and boisterous, but Anissa pinched me and told me don't be so loud. But I do have to take advantage of this moment. Every veteran in the house, please stand. I will tell you all right here and now as I stand up here, I'm very proud of what the University of Chicago is doing. It is an awesome thing to see that across this university, we have faculty, staff, and students who are committed and who are serving our country, and they are serving each other. And they have family members that are right here, right now, supporting them. And we are proud and we are happy. You all may be seated. I'm not gonna take up much time because my understanding is there should be some food upstairs. I see some people from the police department showed up. That was one of the things that I was advised. Yes, we have some grub. Hoorah. Oh, happy belated Marine Corps birthday. I'm sorry, y'all, I had to get that plug in. That was Saturday, none personal. But again, we want to thank you and just offer to you not just an opportunity to submit some of these very important things that have happened to you in your life, but to remind you that this committee is here to serve. So if you want to give some submissions or if you have any ideas or want to be a part of it, just make sure that you contact the Veterans Committee. We have some information upstairs. There's also an event coming up on December 7th, which is going to be a parade. It's a veterans recognition. That information is also in your brochure. So take time and support. Support each other and support us because I need your help. I need some ideas. I would love to have more folks involved. Anissa would as well. It is very important that we document how significant your contributions and that of your family members are to this university. All right? All right. This is an awesome turnout.
compared to the last couple of years, Anissa, it's growing. And I'm proud of you. You have been doing one heck of a job. This is awesome.